Airbnb should learn also that there is much more to India than just getting more Airbnb hosts.
Welcome to the Airbnb Tales podcast, episode number 3. This is your host, Marsh Paul Simon, and I'm going to take you on a jam-packed ride where I interview Airbnb guests, hosts, super hosts from around the world. So let's get started, y'all. Today we have with us a veteran from the Indian Air Force, veteran Casey Kuruvilla, who has been hosting in Bangalore for the past 4 years and is now a super host. He is a very interesting personality and he has loads of tales to tell us about his life and journey thus far and how after retirement, Airbnb has helped him a lot. So let's get right to it. I generally do a thorough research on all my guests and I found your history kind of fascinating. So before we get it to the Airbnb part, can you give us a brief introduction about yourself?
Well, yes, of course I can. And basically, let me start by telling you that a lot of my fighter pilot existence and the desire and all the achievements that came into it really stems from my background. And that background is rather interesting because I think there are very few people who've had a young life as I did, and then which led me into another unique life, all of which was one. And that is why when, you know, I talk to close friends, I always tell them that I went to boarding school at 5 and I came out at 56. So that will tell you that there was very little dad and mom around in when we were young, you know, at that age, because I'm really a WW2 baby,
right.
Born in 1945, and India gained independence, or rather we became a republic in 1947, and 2 years, so that is 3 years, right? And another 2 years later, bang, I was in boarding school at a time when India was mutating and parents were going through all kinds of ups and downs, selecting their careers and positioning themselves in a post-independent India. So children like us were just, they were not meant to be heard or seen. So we were disposed and put into boarding schools. And that was tough because even on holidays, parents were quite far away in independent India and in a bank called the Imperial Bank of India, of which my father was part of. He was a chartered accountant. He was very well known and reputed. So he was constantly on the move. So there was nothing else he could do but put us into boarding school. And that's
so
how I grew
you stayed
up.
In the boarding school. So how often did you see your parents?
But that's what I'm saying. Precisely, very little. We used to be dispatched to our uncles, aunties, or some very wealthy kids' home with whom you became friends. And for example, at one stage in La Martinia, my father was sent to Andaman Islands to open banks there with the idea of securing that area. I still remember that Mrs. Alva came, visited us, and my father told us, this was somewhere when I was in NDA, somewhere around 1964, 63 or 64. I beg your pardon. This was when I was 8 years old. That was another visit. When I was 8 years old and I was in La Martinière, and that was in 1958.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's right, 1958. So that's when my father went to Andaman Islands, and there were very few times still that we could really go there when the ships were organized or when the holidays matched the shipping schedule. And then there were the monsoons to worry about. In these months, you couldn't travel to the Andaman Islands in those tiny ships. It was unhealthy for, you know, children to be alone on ships, and nobody ever did that. So yes, to answer your questions, very little did I see of our parents.
And then you got into NDA after your time in Calcutta in La Martinière.
La Martinière, and from there I went to finish school in Montfort because, as I told you, my parents were in Andaman Islands, and the commissioner, IG police, harbour master, the judiciary and bank, all the kids of these officials studied in Montfort, Yercaud. So I was transferred from La Martinière to Montfort in Yercaud, Salem. So I finished school there, and that's right. From there, straight into NDA.
And then, like, how was the selection and all that? Did you go through that 10-day selection process, like how we do it nowadays?
Oh, yes, indeed. It was not the number of days. It was how tough it was and the number of candidates that you were competing with and number of places. I did the UPSC exam in Patna from the Patna Medical College. That was the exam center. Then I did one set of PABT and other tests in Allahabad Selection Board, and yet another for the Air Force in Dehradun.
Wow.
And finally, the results came out, and then we joined NDA.
Right. And then can you tell us a little about your brief wartime stories?
Yeah. So after NDA, you know, I mentioned last time, after NDA, we went to our professional academies in the Air Force, where we commenced flying training.
And where was this?
So it started in Nagpur on the L5, then to Allahabad on the, on the HG2, then to Jodhpur on the Harvard, and then to Hakimpet in Hyderabad.
All over the place.
On the Vampire. And that's where I did really well, because that's the culmination of our training. And at the commissioning parade, I was very happy to learn that I had stood first in the whole course, and I got the Sword of Honor.
Wow.
For which there was a plaque given by President Zakir Hussain. And
wow.
And the VIP reviewing the parade was, I think it was Dr. Swaran Singh or Mr. Swaran Singh, who was then the defense minister. And I think he was concurrently foreign minister as well, officiating. Anyway, so he was the person who gave away the trophy. So I got the Sword of Honor, the president's plaque, the best all-round fighter pilot, jet pilot, and the Ramchandani trophy for standing first in academics. So three trophies I got. And so having done well there, to continue with your question, they immediately posted me to a very nice squadron, which was very, in those days, it was very tough. You got to know within the first, 10 to 15 days where you stood in a squadron.
Right.
Because flying would start and standards are very, very high. So my first squadron was 7th Squadron, first operational squadron was 7th Squadron, which is known as Battle Axis, where I flew the Hunter, and I did well in that squadron. I became fully operational. And from there, I was one of the youngest fighter pilots to be posted to Sukhois. The Sukhoi 7 was then a recent introduction into the Indian Air Force.
That was the fastest plane then, is it?
Well, we had the MiG-21. It's not about speed. Mm-hmm. It's all about roles.
Yeah.
And so my role on the Hunter was more ground attack and a combination of ground attack and air defense role. And the Sukhoi 7 also was strictly a strike squadron, strike aircraft. But we also practiced a lot of air defense, air defense maneuvering and tactics, and basically gained knowledge on how air combat is done, apart from ground attack, which is basically striking targets inside Pakistan, from the air. So that was what my squadron role was. It was a strike squadron. And primarily most of the time, all the missions are in deep inside Pakistan,
Okay.
Either their forward bases or further inwards where you hit them so that they're, all the aircraft or assets that they take deep inside to protect them from airstrikes from India. Well, we had to reach them also and interdict those areas as well. So that was it. So that's how my squadron entered the war when it started in December, on the 4th of December, 1971. And it was very, our morale was very, very high because we were well-trained, and most of us were actually waiting for this opportunity. We trained for this, and therefore we were very excited to get into this battle. And and we all had our little apprehensions. And I would say that, everyone has fear. You can't say you don't have fear, but a lot of us were trained how to overcome that fear. So when you got into a mission, there was no question of thinking about anything.
Right.
You were so occupied with doing what you had to do in the cockpit that you just carried on, like it was the back of your palm, second, it's just automatically got done. So
was it the naval war which happened in 1971 between India and Pakistan?
No, Paul, The war was a war. The naval action was a part of it. So there was no such a thing as a naval 1971 war. It was the Indo-Pak conflict or Indo-Pak war of 1971.
Okay, okay.
And that was a part of the liberation. I mean, it took place because of the liberation of Bangladesh, East Pakistan, which we, you know, broke away. Yes. We had it. Yeah, that's right. We helped to create Bangladesh. And you know, to avenge that, the Pakistanis launched this attack on the western sector, on our western borders. And that was the December conflict, started on 4th, when unilaterally, you know, they struck several of our northwestern, you know, borders, I mean, airfields, and the war started with that. Okay. Yes. Yeah, you said you researched. So you're probably also aware that in that war, my aircraft got hit and it caught fire. And this was on while attacking a secondary target. And
this was inside Pakistan, somewhere close to Rawalpindi.
Yeah. No, Rawalpindi was where we were interned as prisoners of war. Okay. In the first phase of internment, first 8 months, and the last 4 months were in Lialpur. So Rawalpindi was just the capital, you know, where we were taken and interned. But the war was all along the Western Front, right? And as you would have researched, as you said, so my aircraft got struck while by a stray
bullet.
Yes, that's right, because it just caught fire at low level, and we had overflown the strategic reserves, which we detected based on an army forward air controller's call. So after the strike over the Dera Baba Nanak bridge, we were returning when we heard this call, and my CO was the team leader of that strike. So he decided that, you know, we would go and check it out. And what we found was a huge, movement of troops and allied equipment. Obviously, later we learned that that were the strategic reserves of the Pakistan Armed Forces, of the Pakistan Army. And they were moving to position for a breakout, you know, or to help in a particular sector, help their troops to, you know, get into India at a particular vital point. So that was it. I spent the rest of the war interned in a jail in Pakistan, in Rawalpindi.
Wow, great.
And that continued for 1 year. So 1 year later...
Did they torture you?
Well, I wouldn't say that there was any direct torture. There was torture of different kinds, in the sense that wherever I got captured, I got beaten up, mm-hmm. which is to be expected. And then, of course, in the POW camp, it was more of... you know, mental stresses induced by them. For example, they will never come to take you to the toilet, and, you know, you're bursting to go to the toilet, and sometimes you have to relieve yourself in the room.
Wow. Okay.
Which you feel is, you know, the idea is to try to break you. But we were just too well prepared, and morale was very high. So it didn't matter. You know, they had to ultimately clean up the place in any case. And they were trying to break your morale and spirit, but none of that happened. In fact,
and you were along with 600 Jawans and five of your Air Force pilots.
No. The Jawans were in a different place. They were interned in the army, under the army. We were under the Air Force, and we were 12 pilots who were totally in number and held by them, out of which two were repatriated by the International Committee of the Red Cross by their intervention, because they had wounds that needed prolonged treatment. And under Geneva Conventions, we managed to, you know, make a dent on the Pakistanis and have these two repatriated. So they went back to India after 3 months of internment, 3 or 4 months, I think. I think it was 3 months. And rest of us stayed on. 10 of us remained there till the very end, when Mr. Bhutto walked in one day and told us to go home, saying...
prisoners in India.
No. Not in exchange at all. We were just asked to... We were all dressed up one day, and this was in a maximum security prison in Lialpur. And we were seated in a courtyard, and an iron door opened, and there's a background to this. Of course, we knew something is happening because we were asked to prepare the helipad, Air Force, and we prepared. I was the youngest there, so I had to also help out, and I had actually done the whole spade work with the with about 10 jawans from our army contingent. And along with me, there was a senior officer also, because we preferred not to be alone. So we always operated. So I don't remember who it was, but I know I was there helping out with the helipad and our jawans. Yeah, so after the helipad was prepared, one fine day, a helicopter, a Mi-8, I think it was a Russian Mi-8, that landed. And after that, we were taken, after that, we were already in this courtyard where this iron door opened, and just right in front of us, we were youngsters seated right in front, first row, and the jawans were all on either side, and senior officers were in the, the senior officers were in the row behind us. And that's right, Bhutto walked in and he said, "Gentlemen, I want you to go home. I'd like you to go home and take a message that we want peace with India, and please return our 93,000 prisoners." These were his words. And that's how the whole thing started, our return to India.
Wow, great story. And then on return, you started your long career in flying and teaching flying.
Yes, well, that's right. Absolutely. On return, we were all, sent home one after the other, because there are certain processes. Even though you're coming home, you have to be security cleared. So that's a process. And the process involves in-house security clearance and external services agencies like, India's security agencies like the IB, Intelligence Bureau. I think they were involved. Investigation, they're not involved with us. But for these matters, Air Force Intelligence and the Intelligence Bureau of India, they were involved in, with us.
Right.
We were asked to write from the first day that we were missing till the day we returned. We had to fill in several pages of our own personal experiences. And these were all, it's not written collectively. You're isolated and you are all by yourself and you write what you went through.
Oh, okay.
So you don't know what others are writing. Yeah, that's right. So it's corroborative. They corroborate everything. So if you think your morale was high, somebody else is also commenting on it. So, yeah, that's probably one reason why I got a Veer Chakra in 73, almost 1.5 years after the war.
You were awarded more than one by and a half the years president, off. Is it?
Actually, I got it 72 years. Yes, president of India, almost 2 years later. So they verify everything. They look at the films that they assess, that the Air Force does. It assesses all the films and whatever you did. And then the recommendation is looked at. And then a citation is called for. And that citation is sent up by the Air Force to the president's office. And he sanctions it.
Right.
Or he accedes to the Air Force recommendation. Yeah.
And then could you tell us how you got back to flying? Generally, those who are ejected?
So, yes. Now, that's a very interesting question, because all of us, we were all sent on enforced leave for, I think, a month. And we all returned to our families one by one. And I found I was the only person to be returned to my original squadron. So I was the only pilot who went back, I think my information is correct. If I remember, my memory serves me right, that I was the only pilot who returned to his original squadron. And that was a great morale booster, because the same people were there with whom you fought the war. There were some additional entries. Then you learnt about some people whom you lost in the war, some who died and whom we didn't know about. Some who ejected, got injured, and who probably didn't make it back into flying. There was all kinds of things awaiting the return. So it was real excitement for me to go back to my original unit in which I had fought the war. There's no greater satisfaction you can get than to rejoin your buddies, with whom you fought the war, and to be accepted. So yes, to answer your question, I started flying the Sukhoi again, but I didn't fly in my unit for too long, because I think about within 3 months, I got posted to the flying instructor school. And that was really tough for me, because at a long absence from serious flying, I had to go to the flying instructor school where you are learning absolute precision on how to teach. So that was very tough.
Right.
But, you put your shoulder to the wheel when things become tough for you. And as they say, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Yeah, so that's what I did. And I I will very happily tell you that I stood second in flying in the flying instructor school. And I came second by a very narrow margin, very, very narrow margin, which is always the case because competing at for the first place is not a easy thing. And the margins are very, very, very,
very narrow.
Yeah. So I stood second and I was posted to the Air Force Academy, where happily we were posted on the India's, you know, HAL's Kiran, which is the first jet aircraft, jet trainer rather, that was manufactured by HAL, a splendid aeroplane. And we were unique in the sense that we were the first batch of instructors to be posted to the Kiran, which dealt with the first batch of cadets who only flew the jet after a very short basic training on the HJT. I mean, on the HT-2, the piston propeller aircraft, they came directly onto jets and they flew 180 hours, a unique syllabus and a unique, what should I say, system tried out by the Air Force.
So Kiran was the base before you get to the Sukhois and...
No, Kiran, no. This was much after all that. This was in the middle of my career after coming back. You know, I had flown the Sukhois before the war, fought the war on Sukhois, came back, flew the Sukhois again. And now I had become an instructor. As an instructor at the Air Force Academy, I was one of the first lot of pilots to instruct on the Kiran aircraft. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
That as instructors, we flew the Kiran and our very first batch was the batch which was inducted directly onto the Kiran jet aircraft.
Okay.
Without going through an intermediate stage. Yeah. So that's what it was. So that was a very nice experiment tried by the Air Force and it reposed its confidence in us. So we were also very happy that we were a select lot of instructors chosen to fly the 180-hour syllabus with this batch. So they flew a very few hours on the HT-2, did their solo and came directly onto, did their solo and certain handling sorties to get familiarization with the air. And they came straight into the jet training syllabus, which was a long syllabus over almost 1 year. And then they got commissioned.
And then you continued your teaching for a long period, is it?
Yes. Another year and a half. So almost 2.5 years there. And then I got posted to Iraq, where I flew in the Iraqi Air Force as an instructor. And I flew the L-29 and the L-39, two types of aircraft. And I instructed Iraqi cadets. And so that was the part, the initial stages.
So how did you hear about Airbnb and when did you get started with Airbnb hosting?
Oh, well, you know, it's a very interesting question because I have to tell you, when I came out of the Air Force, I was really as the guy in Deutsche Bank who actually, it was the only interview that I got.
Okay.
And I was selected also by them. Wow. And he was a Goan head of HR guy who had a lot of lovely things to say. But he said, you know, you're clearly overqualified. Nobody has done the kind of things that you have done. So I took on this job and then went on to another job concurrently because the money wasn't much. You know, they exploit you.
Okay.
They know that you're hired and you need a job desperately.
Right.
And I wasn't willing to take on any jobs in defense because, you know, a lot of guys go into defense or they become security officers. This is definitely not my cup of tea.
Yes.
So I want to stay in something very civilian. So the next job I took up was I headed a software company for 6.5 years.
Wow. Okay.
And this job I did for 6 years. So, you know, in all, I was very much a civilian. And in between, I studied psychology for 2 years.
Okay.
I went and bared my soul with a whole lot of younger people. And I just did it to learn about the outside world. We are very personally disciplined and all that sort of things, which, you know, you don't find outside. What they say is what they don't mean. And what they mean is what they don't say.
Right.
So, yeah, that was the time. I mean, things are changing, of course. Dynamic India. But that was the time. And this is what my experience was. So I studied psychology. I chose personal growth and corporate communication. I did well there. That's how I was able to do well with the software company. Nobody has left that company even after I left. And when I say nobody, I mean the MD still wants me to come back. I said, no, thanks. I've moved on. And the people I recruited during my time have stayed on because I gave them a sense of purpose, a sense of values that, listen, this job is as good as trying to get one somewhere else, thinking that you learn a lot there. Right. This is aviation. As long as man is living, you learn about aviation. So having finished that, Manish, I was doing another job when my younger daughter visited and said, listen, you have guests in your house all the time. All your friends are coming from all over the world.
Okay.
Why don't you start Airbnb?
Oh, okay.
So I said, what?
Daughter told you about it.
Yes. And you know, she's a bit scared of me because of being a strict father. Right. And she had come in from San Francisco, which is the hub of Airbnb.
Right,
so
exactly.
Very quietly, she made a site called Casey and Grace.
Okay.
And day of her departure, she went to the airport and says, Appa, you will do very well in this area. Instead of hosting your friends for nothing and you're struggling with a meager pension, the pension was only 11,000, 10,005 rupees. Exactly.
Okay.
10,500 rupees those days. And it was tough. And all the money that I had, I spent on educating the girls in America and all that.
Right.
So I had nothing. So, and now my working days were coming to an end. So she said, try this. So I said, I'm not going to do it. She said, let Amma do it.
Okay.
You help her. So she made the site, changed the name of the site and made it Casey and Grace. And from then onwards, we've just moved on. The first person who came to our house, I think this was one of the questions you asked.
Yes.
Was a German lady called Sky and her husband.
Okay.
We were extremely nervous.
Okay.
She came to our home in the room, the outside room, which has everything, whatever we hosted, they were independent rooms with their own entrance.
Okay.
So these were not the house. But all of them wanted to try Indian food.
Right.
So breakfast is the only thing where we would entertain because we want to have our own home as well, you know. So at breakfast, we would meet our guests. So she was the first with her husband and she was the lady who booked. And she was very typically German. And one of my best friends during my diplomatic tenure was a German.
Okay.
He was a German
fighter
pilot. So
you knew some
pilot.
German as well, is it?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I mean, German, we have Allianz, I mean, Max Müller Bhavans in India.
Yeah.
So you meet many kids who study German.
Yeah.
So there are little bits of words and sentences that you pick up. So
okay, super.
I was not, and moreover, I had visited Germany, right? In the course of my work, right? Earlier working life. So with the civilians. So I knew everything about Germany and the people especially, starting from the tenure in Iran.
Right.
So she was typical, would not speak, seemed unfriendly.
Okay.
With words, she would eat and go away and, oh, this is nice. That's all.
Okay.
That's lovely. What is this? What is that? What is this? What is that?
Yeah.
And she left after 6 days and we were extremely nervous.
Okay.
Well, how she... And we didn't know that there was a review system.
Right.
So after... 5 days after she left, there was a mail in my box which says, read what Sky, her name was Sky. Sky has written up to you, but in order to do so, please tell us what you felt about your guests. So I wrote a review and, you know, in the Air Force, we write hundreds of
honest
reports
reviews.
Not reviews. Mm-hmm. We write confidential reports. So you know the art of writing and also being a literature
Absolutely.
Student.
Absolutely. I've seen your reviews and it's like really pretty good, you know.
Yeah. So, and not only that, I was a literature student, even though I was science. My God, our parents were like that. They made us study literature separately and I had to pass an exam.
Okay.
So writing letters and English literature was a great strength.
Right.
So, so I wrote a review. And when I read her review, it nearly moved me to tears.
Okay.
She wrote glorious things about us.
Wow.
And about our home and...
Although she didn't interact much with y'all.
Yeah, that's right. So I realized there's a lot of substance in here. And after her, we shut down Airbnb for 6 months.
So this was your bungalow, is it? Where she stayed?
In my house. Yeah, bungalow. In the bungalow.
Okay.
In 166 IAS officers layout.
Because now it's not on Airbnb. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, because I have... closed it down.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
So Grace and I, we closed this down. We said, this is serious stuff. We don't want to get a bad name and all that. So I revamped the whole house and we made the separate entrances and all that more viable.
Right.
And, added additional requisites for hosting.
Okay. So were you doing some research before you did all this?
No, I got back to Sarah and she said, we were never internet allowed. Let me put it like that.
Okay.
I still remember in a very jokingly, in a joking manner, my sergeant, who was my admin PA, came running to me as I was leaving. And he said, sir, here's your email. So I said, what do I need email now? I said, Grace and now are going to be out in the female world, not in the email.
Right.
Laugh. That's the time I got an email in 2001. So you can imagine how challenged we were about the internet.
Yes, yes.
So I didn't know much about how to get into the Airbnb site. But Sarah was a great help.
Okay.
So
she was helping you from the US, right?
From the US, yeah. She would, tell me what to do on Skype.
Yeah.
And how to access and all that. Anyway, I'm a quick learner. I learned very quickly and I get up very early. So that's my strength.
Okay.
Even today. Though
what time do you wake up, sir?
In Jodhpur, I used to wake up at 3:45, 4 o'clock for a run and check out my base.
Wow.
Now I still get up at the same time. Can't sleep. 4 o'clock is my latest rising time.
Okay.
And then I get onto the computer and finish my day's work, make a to-do list and all that sort of stuff.
And you sleep by 10, is it?
Yeah. We don't party much and all that. Grace and I go dancing for the sake of good health. I need to keep her active.
Right.
So we go out dancing often and then we go to theater and we have lots of good friends. So, we sort of manage our time. But on a weekday, routinely, we would crash. I would crash. Grace might watch some TV and all. For me, TV is the idiot box.
Exactly.
If she switches
for me,
9:30, I must in the same room. If we are watching TV, I must sleep by 9:30.
Okay.
I just cry and I wake up early.
So you revamped the whole house and after that, how was it?
Yes. Oh my God. Starting from her review, all were 5-star reviews.
Wow.
Literally all. You can check it out. Everyone. If I didn't get a 5-star review, it was some person who didn't read our, profile properly.
Okay, okay.
And it was because the traffic was too much or it was
because
not where
Bangalore.
She thought our house was.
Yeah.
Accuracy. What they call accuracy.
Right.
So accuracy, for God's sake, is on Google Maps, not mine. You're looking at a Google map when you're coming to my place, right?
Yeah,
and you're deciding.
One person got lost coming to your place, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, these are some of the things I have against Airbnb. The inaccuracy of their, business, leaning. I would use the word leaning.
Yeah. I'm sure they listen to this podcast and take that to the.
Yeah. They're in a big hurry.
Yeah.
They have not understood the Indian market at all.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know if you've seen a picture where I made a mural costing 1.5 lakhs.
Okay.
And I made it with young boys from North Karnataka.
Wow.
Giving them an opportunity into art because I love art. I've been collecting art for the last 35 years. And this was a young group I learned about from the villages. And I made them do a village scene in fiber. It cost me close to 2 lakhs.
Okay.
And there's a lady with her palm open and the Airbnb sign on it.
Wow, okay.
And it's for Airbnb Delhi. It is there. They are the people who represent Airbnb San Francisco. But none of them came and had a look. I don't know what interests them really. They should be involved deeply. I felt that the involvement of Airbnb in Delhi is left to a few concerned individuals. It's not a collective effort.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
That is sadly the case. Because when we went to Paris, we found that Grace and I were the ones who were interacting with others. All of them had come with the head of the country, Airbnb.
Okay.
Except in India. The head of
Airbnb. So you were kind of representing India.
No, I wasn't. I wouldn't say that. That's not correct.
Okay.
Eventually, I think on the second day, this is a 3-day event.
Okay.
On the second day, somebody came to us and said, we are from Delhi. I said, thanks for letting us know. Where were you beforehand?
Yeah.
That's not It's not nice. Of course, we hit it off well with them. Of course, we, you know, got together and made, you know, attempts. You know, people must know that we guys in the services, we are very social, stemming from a different thing. We command men.
Absolutely.
And women, and not small numbers. In Jodhpur, the strength of all the units put together is a massive number. It's a massive number. You right. can't even guess.
Right.
So I don't want to mention the numbers and all that. It's a massive number.
Okay.
And any place that we go to, Air Force Academy, is a massive number of people. So okay. My personal strength is with people. So I asked them, I said, listen, you guys are conspicuous in your absence. You need to do something. And anyway, I'll come to that later in some of the other questions. But that is how I dug into Airbnb, and all our reviews were exceptional reviews.
So you had over 100 and maybe 200 reviews, I'm not sure, which are rated as 5 stars. What is the secret yes. behind that, sir?
Nothing. It's our involvement and caring.
Okay.
Because I think it's only now the recent younger generation of visitors, you know, Indian youth and all, they begin to appreciate what we are.
Yes.
They all call us uncle and auntie and all that. I say, there's no question of you calling me uncle and auntie. It's Casey and Grace.
Right.
We would prefer that. And we would like to be down to earth with you guys and understand what it makes you tick.
Wow. Okay.
There is another serious reason which I want you to please bear in mind.
Yes.
Grace and I did this not out of economic necessity.
Okay.
It also, we did this because both of us have a similar background. She was in boarding school by 11. I was from 5.
Yeah.
And you know, it is our friends. It is unknown people, common people.
Yeah.
Who came to our help when we needed it.
Right.
Throughout our lives.
Absolutely. So.
And therefore, this is payback time.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Even my side, when I started Airbnb, it was not for the money and all that. It was just to, you know, meet people from around the world.
It was to keep me occupied. It was to give back. What goes around comes around.
Exactly.
Right? So you've got to keep that in mind.
Right. So have you had any interesting stories or experiences to tell us during your hosting journey as an Airbnb super host?
Indeed. There are two stories I want to tell you.
Okay.
So there was I'll tell you two more, both ladies. We have a lot of lady guests because they trust us for providing them security.
Right.
You know,
and they come read because of the reviews and all that.
That's one. Other thing is our age. I'm 74 and Grace is 70.
Okay.
And you know, and they definitely trust us like their own parents. And,
okay.
And
okay.
Most, I think we are far senior to even their parents in most cases.
Right.
Right. Anyway, so this was a case where this girl landed up and forgot that her visa had expired, and it had expired for over 14 days.
Wow. Okay.
Right?
She was from which place?
From UK.
Okay. Okay.
So she came, I mean, the cops came to deport her.
Okay.
Right? So I told them, I said, listen, this is what we do here. And this is, she said, no, we know about her because she has already reported to the FRRO.
Okay.
And, but she has not renewed her visa. So my God, I said, bloody hell. So I told them, I said, if you know so much, then you know she's not going to run away. She can't. She has no visa. So let's do something about it. So they said, sir, we can't do anything because we can only give an extension of visa up to 4 days. And even the Home Ministry can't do anything beyond a certain number of days.
Okay.
So I said, let me find out. So I rang up some friends in the Home Ministry, you know, and yeah. I mean, I rang up some friend who had contacts in the Home Ministry. So I told her, listen, I can't fly. I don't have the money to fly to Delhi. You fly to Delhi and report to this friend of mine.
Okay.
And he said, yeah. So she landed in Delhi and called him.
Okay.
And he said, you Home Ministry and report to so-and-so. She went there and they said, listen, we can't regularize more than 14 days. So in other words, we can't give you an extension on your visa. But
yeah.
These 14 days, we'll regularize it.
Okay.
And they did that.
Great.
Then they said, what do? So she called me from there. So I said, listen, I had a diplomatic tenure. That was long ago. I don't know who's there, but let me ask the same friend. That same friend said, okay, don't worry, Casey. I have a friend in MEA. I'll send her to the UK desk.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked him to send her to the UK desk, knowing how the system operates. So she was sent to the UK desk, and the UK desk people are very nice, our diplomats.
Okay.
They extend, they regularize those 14 days.
They
plus
extend the
added,
visa.
Yeah, no, added 3 days. So they gave her 3 more days. So they gave her a visa for the lapsed period plus 3 days.
Wow, okay.
So that ensured that she doesn't get debarred from coming back to
exactly,
India.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and not only that, she won't be deported and she'll get privilege to come back to India again. So now the mother kicked in and wrote, what have you done? Amazing. So she flew into India from London.
Again, to meet you and yes.
No, yeah, she had to collect her daughter's baggage.
Okay, okay.
So daughter left without anything. Where does she go to Delhi? She doesn't know anybody. I also knew just about a few friends.
Okay.
So mother came, collected her baggage. I took her to a pub. She got herself, you know, drank beer, silly.
Okay.
She was so happy, overjoyed at what we did.
Wow.
And she flew, collected her baggage, flew to Delhi, collected her daughter and off they went. And
and they're forever indebted to you.
Listen to this. Years later, when we went to London, I don't know how they learned. They learned over maybe from the children on the WhatsApp, not WhatsApp, on the Facebook. I don't go to Facebook and all that, you know.
Okay.
Reading, though I'm there. So they learned that we are in London. They left their home, came to the hotel, pulled us out of that place, took us to their home.
Wow.
So we lost money and all that. And, you know, we learned that they manufacture spare parts for cars for, guess what? The Jaguar, the Bentley, the Rolls Royce.
Okay.
We are very wealthy people. And they had their own racing car, which they took to Sydney. By then, our younger daughter, Sarah, was in Sydney. So they linked up with Sarah, visited her, had a wonderful time in Sydney. Sarah hosted them to Indian food and some, you know, it was the naming ceremony of her son. So she's married to a Hindu boy from Rajasthan.
Okay.
So all those traditions and all meant a lot to Sarah and her husband. So these people got a look into what Indian traditions were, even in Australia. And yes, it became a great friendship and they are still our friends. Wonderful friendship.
That's quite a story, especially the second one.
Yes. And the other lady is very interesting. We only saw her for one night.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
She's an American girl, barely 23.
Okay.
When she came, there was no way I could contact her and tell her how to come to our home. So I sent her a driver. She didn't take that car. But the driver went, or I don't remember whether she took our car, but the driver went and put up her name. And just by God's grace, she saw that and went to him. And he either brought her or gave her the address. She landed up. And when she landed up in our home, we were very, very surprised. A, she's American, behaved like she wasn't one, and was very subdued and, you know, very, very subdued and looked very sad.
Right.
After a little while of rest, after a long flight, you know, I quizzed her and I asked her, can we in any way give you something after your long flight or something and put you at ease? She said, no, no, thank you. I said, how come you're traveling without a phone and a laptop? She said, you know, I was told that you'll get everything will get stolen in India.
Oh,
and that this is... So she was typically American from somewhere west where they haven't heard of India and they think we are riding on elephants still. Okay. I was asked this question. I'm not joking. I was asked this question by an American who asked me if I still ride on elephants. So I told him I'm from Kerala. We still do. And I said, sometimes we jump out of windows and swing on trees to go to work. And my wife feeds me on raw meat. So really, that's really funny. I mean, that was years ago when I met this American who jokingly asked me this question. So I wasn't surprised when she asked, when she told me that I heard that India is a place where you'll get robbed of everything. So I said, have you thought about it the other way? I said, we were desperate knowing that a single girl and incommunicado. Then she, you know, to cut a long story short, I think she was newly married, had a fight with her husband, left everything. She took off and she was heading to Mysore for peace and tranquility.
Okay.
In some Vipassana cum yoga course.
Okay.
That's all I could extract.
Okay.
And as strangely as she came to our home, she left and we never heard of her after that. And I'm still wondering till today, you know, what became of her, whether she ever made it back to America.
Did you get a review for that? Or you may have?
No. Okay. She never wrote a review. And, you know, she never wrote a review. And the thing about Airbnb is you can't write a review. You may write a review as we did, but you don't get a feedback or you never hear of that person again.
Right.
Because they don't put it on the net.
Yes.
You know, and in that sense, I think Airbnb needs to become more humane. They are very cut and dry and they're very, you know, when you don't own assets and you're making money, you're just thinking about making money. And I think the Indian market will prove its point to them because they're going to have a tough competition here. Because rural, you know, they enter rural India, for example. I saw some cases, some people came to us whom we know. We are in touch with grassroots people, you know. I mean, I go out and help the poor. So you're in touch with people who have nothing. I went to a home where the whole family was sitting on the road after the Chennai floods.
Okay.
And I built them a home standing there 1 week. I spent 2.5 lakhs and built a home for them.
Oh, great, sir.
Yeah. So those people know. So I know what it is like to be really poor and, you know, to be out in the villages. Now to expect Airbnb to run in a village, that's fine. You may get a room there for 200 rupees and you will host a village experience for somebody in Europe or USA.
Right.
But you can't price my property in Bangalore at 200 rupees.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So they introduced this system of dynamic pricing. Till then, we were perfectly
instant
all right.
Pricing. Yeah.
Yeah. Instant pricing or dynamic pricing. No, instant booking and dynamic pricing.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
Yeah. So I don't agree with both of these, right?
So you don't do instant booking?
No, I've allowed it now, just now, because okay. They said, let's try it in your place because you're very popular Airbnb. We'd like to try it with you. On that basis, I acceded, right?
Okay.
Because there was some mail from somebody and I don't remember exactly. You see, can be verified. So I'm not hiding anything. I'm telling you what I remember and what the truth is.
Yeah.
And that's the way we are. We, you know, in the service, there's only, you're not in a civilian environment. There's nothing, no telling lies. You're briefing for war or you're debriefing after war. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
After a mission.
Yeah.
So there's no, everything is the truth and nothing but the truth.
Right.
You don't get it. And then you go home and you talk to your wife a little bit and go to sleep. That's it. That's why I found working outside very tough. And I suited myself by studying psychology.
Okay.
And it was nice. Yeah, it was good. A great experience. So I'm now perfectly a fish back in the civilian waters, if I may call it that.
Yeah.
Quite comfortable.
So and you seem to be an avid traveler as well, because I see reviews from hosts in Cuba to hosts in Thailand and all over India. So what is your experience as a Airbnb traveler and staying in other people's homes?
Oh, damn good question. Thank God you asked me that question.
Okay.
There can never be any hospitality compared to what we offer. And I'm going to make a statement, you know.
Okay.
There was a picture of our house in a collage sent to us from somewhere.
Okay.
I don't remember where. This was a few years ago. And Airbnb is not supposed to advertise your house. So till today, I don't know whether it's an advertisement or not. But the first house was from Germany.
Wow.
The second was ours. And the third was Japan.
Okay.
And I am assuming, I again say, I am assuming that they were talking or this was a reference or an ad or a consideration of the best 3 Airbnb hosting homes or experiences in the world. Obviously, they will not accept it or tell you this, but I had that picture for a long time. It was sent to me by somebody who saw one picture of our home, you know, the entrance. And it was very nicely, collaged. Yeah, that's the word. It was collaged, but we recognized our home. And somebody wrote, your home is on Airbnb, discreetly collaged. I mean, discreetly advertised. So I said, send me a picture. And they sent us the picture. So if I were to send Airbnb a message, I would say to them that you have a lot to learn.
Right.
And making money should not be the only object, right? And try to understand India before you think India is like any other place in the world. It is not. It is the oldest culture in recorded history, if I'll put it that way. It is the most loving nation where we are a Hindu nation.
Yes.
And everybody has the same traditions. I'm from Kerala. My driver, I'm in Bali, right? He's a Hindu. He was telling me on the way, it's a long drive. He was telling me last night, he said, we have a lot to learn from you.
Wow.
And I said, you visit Kerala and you'll have even more to learn. Where you can say we are almost 30% of each community.
Yeah.
The Muslims visit the Hindu temple. The Hindus go to the mosque. The Christians go both places. Everybody celebrates Onam together. You eat in each other's homes. There is no trouble at all, except that is that trouble which is made by some
politicians. Exactly.
I don't even want to say politicians. I would say some political standoff.
Okay.
Somebody trying to compete with somebody else or trying to flex some muscle or gain some upper hand.
Yes.
I think the Indian people are not we are not foolish. We'll sort out all the politics, I'm sure, in the long run.
Yeah.
Unless something really stupid is done and immediately affects us like the French Revolution or something where you end up in civil strife.
Yeah.
But coming back to your question, I don't think anybody anywhere in the world can beat us to hospitality. And I don't mean Casey and Grace listings. I mean any average Indian, you know, their standards may not be the same as our standards. And that is because of my exposure and Grace's. We've been hosting friends all over the world. So Airbnb is nothing but a hosting experience.
And, absolutely.
And ours is a hosting experience with a heart and with caring. And
I think
with,
that's how it's supposed to be everywhere. But unfortunately, people are now doing it for money.
Sadly so. But I think we still, that is why I haven't, you know, got on to what we say, like a considered opinion to Airbnb. I'm sure Brian Chesky and these guys are good. I've seen them at close quarters at that experience or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
The one, Airbnb One or whatever they call it.
In Delhi.
They mean well. But you see, all management came from the armed forces or collective experiences of all the wars and, warlike bodies, which are armed forces.
Right.
Managing men and managing human beings. I think they have a lot to learn. Somewhere at the intermediate levels where Brian hands down and decentralizes management, they have a lot to learn at those levels.
Right.
Because it's not enough to give instruction. Mind you, if you call the Airbnb call center, I think those case managers are the best, some of the best, not only well-educated. They know their subject perfectly.
Have you had instances calling them?
Yes, sorry?
Have you had instances calling the Airbnb call center?
My God, I'm the only fellow who calls them. If you ask the call center, I pick up my phone and I call immediately and I tell them that, listen, you got to get this right. We are having this issue and I want this issue sorted out, right?
Right.
And you know, one of the things they should have a special number for an Airbnb host, super host especially.
Right.
And I think they'll do very well to learn from American Express. You call them, you immediately get connected. And in 30 seconds or less, you're speaking to a case manager in American Express, even in India.
I think they should do that.
Whereas I'm calling them long distance. I'm paying big bucks for that call. And what am I doing at the end? I'm providing valuable inputs and advice to them on something which I can't resolve.
Yes, sir.
So I really feel that there should be a lot more interaction with the super hosts at a ground level, you know, not at internet level. You send me something. Not everybody is tech savvy and not every question can be answered on a Airbnb network. You can't.
Right.
You just can't, you know. That's why they've introduced this thing, other. Invariably, I'm ticking other because the kind of question you want to ask is not listed. It can't be. Can you think of everything? You can't. Right. And I think they should take experiences of experienced people like us. After all, there are guys all over the world. I'm not the only experienced Airbnb host or the experienced professional. But yes, my professional career and experiences are unique. There is no doubt about it. Because I don't think, even if I look at my friends, nobody's had this kind of experiences.
Yeah.
Right. Being a prisoner of war, going from here to there, being in boarding school from the age of 5. You know, you're studying in tough schools of those age. In the 1915s, Lamartine was a plumbing tough school, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very tough. And you have no father or mother there. They don't. Only the cane works. And I used to be good in sports. The rugby shoes used to come from UK. And in fact, if they were one size short, the plumbing rugby teacher, he beat your foot into it.
Right.
It's so funny, Mr. Sarkis, the Armenian who was our rugby teacher. My God, he would just whack your foot into thing, you know, and if your knee displaced or something, he'd whack it back into place.
Okay.
Kneecap. Oh my God.
So what is your goal going ahead with Airbnb hosting?
You know, it's a very interesting question. I have no goal, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I'm just going to continue to do this as an interesting facet in my life. I'm not doing to make money. I don't need any money. In fact, whatever we make, we're definitely giving it back to the guest.
Right.
By virtue of an experience.
So you're doing it just for the experience and not for...
And for the fun of it. Mm-hmm. I don't think... You see...
What about the passive income you get through Airbnb?
Good question. There is no passive income. For example, the two flats we're running now, listing 5 and listing 6, we are break even and we are losing money money. So we're thinking of closing it down because they hire flats. If you're doing Airbnb from the precincts of your own home, then it makes sense because even in dynamic lowering of pricing, you know, and I think Airbnb sometimes is fishy because when you decide mutually that this is your minimum price, you find that somebody is getting our place at a lower price. I don't know how. I haven't understood that.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess Airbnb has to answer all those.
Yeah. I think we need to be a little more interactive than.
So that's a rented place which you've given on Airbnb, is it?
Yes. Okay. Both are rented. And, you know, and if you work, sit down and work. And what are we providing? Best internet, best channels, best AC, a maid, daily cleaning of the house. Do you think you can get this in Europe or in America? I went for Oshkosh. My room was not cleaned in 9 days.
Wow.
And the sheets were not changed in 9 days. The host was a lady. I didn't want to tell her that, you know.
Okay.
Impolite. We are taught to respect ladies in our society.
Right.
And in my service, right? You don't want to go and tell her you haven't changed. I told her once discreetly, you know, where I asked her, when is the change of sheet? She said, it'll be done and never done. That's it. That's how it is.
But did you reflect that on the reviews?
No.
Okay.
I did not because...
You're being a gentleman.
No. I don't want to say that. I never wrote a review.
Okay.
Because if I had, I would have been honest about it. I just left it at that.
Okay. Great.
Mind you, as a couple, they were very nice to me and I was alone. So Grace was not there. That's another reason.
Okay.
You know, had I been there with Grace, I would have definitely have written that review. We are, you know, rough and tough. It was like being, it was like being back in some NDAs, you know, experience.
Yeah.
So it's fine. You know, it's okay. You know, you get some, you lose some, and you have a good experience somewhere, you don't have a good experience.
Right.
But I have not had, even in India, I've not had an experience of hosting of the class that we provide. I'm not saying that because of us. I'm talking about the caring. Even in India, I never saw the host in 2-3 cases. I never saw the guy.
Oh, right.
And he said, paid breakfast included. So we asked, where's the breakfast? He said, it's in the fridge.
Oh,
it was, it was just bread and butter. Right? That was breakfast. And
where was this?
In Calcutta.
Okay.
Young couple, very nice couple. But they couldn't come and see and interact with. They have their own agenda.
Right.
Right. And they were vegetarians.
Okay.
So all this is not on Airbnb. And nobody in Airbnb knows that we have strict non-vegetarians and vegetarians and that Hindus also are non-vegetarians. They don't have all that ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think they should put that up as well. Yeah.
I mean, no, they should. There's nothing to put up. They should learn, you know.
Yeah.
They should learn and be forthright. And Airbnb should learn also that there is much more to India than just getting more Airbnb hosts. You can get a billion hosts. India's huge. We have a population.
It's just starting, right? Airbnb in India.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. You got to know what you're doing.
Right. So coming to a close, what is the one thing that you feel I should have asked but didn't?
About you should have asked me about
Airbnb. Yeah, related to Airbnb.
That's right. Yes, you've hosted so many of these chats, right?
Yeah.
Has it struck you some of the things that I've told you about Airbnb?
No, actually, since you're the first Airbnb host to be my guest.
Okay. But Manish, here's something. I feel that the level of honesty in Airbnb is seemingly suspect. I'm using that word, seemingly. Because having met people like Brian Chesky, you know, they are entrepreneurs of a really good class. You take Facebook, you take Microsoft, or you take the life of Steve Jobs.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're unique. They stand out. They take chances. They make mistakes. They bounce back. We don't see all that here in our country. We don't get that kind of opportunity. There's no Indian dream. There's an American dream.
Right.
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 Yeah. And that's it. Entrepreneurs are there. They rule the roost of that nation. That's wonderful. That's terrific. But they're not in touch with any form of culture.
Ground reality.
Difference, you know, for them. There it is business or money talks, entrepreneurial experiences and opportunities talk. But here in our side of the world, it's culture that speaks first, right?
Absolutely.
Business and everything comes afterwards and the culture is built into that, right?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
So, I mean, that's what I have to say, that I definitely think that Airbnb needs to breathe oxygen, you know, it needs to have a heart that ticks.
Right.
Based on good oxygen, cultural oxygen, a level playing field.
Good way to
level
put it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, we'll have a small quick fire round. I just want you to give short brief answers to some questions which Airbnb hosts may have in mind when they start hosting.
Sure.
So how do you deal with Airbnb guests who reach very late at night?
I go and receive them myself.
It's not an issue because being old and, I mean, being in a retired, you don't have any conditions.
Not at all. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Okay. How do you deal with guests who stay after the checkout time?
I make them pay extra because a maid has to come from a village.
Okay.
And then I have to deal with Airbnb. I call them directly and say, this guest wants to leave if there's a clash. Okay. Otherwise, they have to pay 500 because I can't pay my maid, especially because it's a hired flat.
Right.
She comes, the auto takes 200 rupees coming, 200 going.
Right.
And I need to pay her at least 100 rupees for the hour or overtime.
Right,
so
right.
Now introduce this.
Okay.
You pay.
Okay.
Yeah, you pay for it.
Okay. So what is the first thing you share with your Airbnb guest after their booking is confirmed?
I ask them to tell me about themselves.
Okay.
And I ask them to read about me.
Okay.
In the review.
Okay.
And if possible, if I remember, I tell them to Google my name and
okay.
to, you know, and I just tell them I started life as a fighter pilot. You might like to read something about us.
Right. And you share contact information, you share location of your place and all that.
Yeah, all that I do. I tell them, you know, how to. It's very simple, actually, in Google Map. Earlier, if you just put my name and the first 166 IAS officer's layout, it will bring you right to our gate. And my reviews were always written like that.
Okay,
then,
great.
You know, what has happened to Google Maps? Today, you can't reach the same place. It takes you 500 meters to the left into some other colony.
Right, right.
Both in Koramangala and in Old Place. In Koramangala, Google Maps has really gone somewhat a little astray.
Right. So do you clean up after every guest checks out or even if it's single night stays?
Definitely. Every day.
Because
what do you mean? You know, India and cleanliness, my God, we are neat freaks.
Right.
And
right,
my wife, right. A perfectionist and a neat freak. So
okay.
that's been our fight for 47 years.
Right. Do you prefer long-term stays or short-term stays?
Actually, if you ask me, I prefer short-term stays.
Okay. Do you prefer food? Do you provide food to your guests and do you charge them for the same?
If they want, we've done it. But now we can't do it from hired rented places.
Okay. Are you okay with early check-ins? How do you deal with back-to-back bookings?
I told you, this is it's like, you know, taking up a war situation. I receive them myself.
Right.
Or I organize to receive them or I send somebody.
Do you
Especially
charge for
if
that?
I'm traveling now, so I send my boy. No, early check-in, yes, because the room has to be done by the maid.
Right.
Wherever the maid is involved, we have to charge. There's no question about it.
Okay. So how do you arrange trips for your guests in case they want to go certain places and all that? Do you help them out?
Yes, I do. And in fact, I made Grace buy a car and on a loan and she's bought it. It's also part of her Airbnb income tax return.
Okay.
And we hire a driver and give them the car and they go wherever they want to.
Wow. Okay. So how do you manage to get a self check-in for one of your listings?
Say again?
How do you manage the self check-in? There's one listing where guests can come and check in by themselves, right?
Yes. Yes. You know, I find that so indifferent, self check-in. Nobody really wants a self check-in.
Right.
All right.
Right.
It is only... It's only the guest who's either a business traveler or somebody who's looking for a cheap flight to enter India, which comes in at really odd times.
Right.
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 Otherwise, see, for example, and let it not be sounding discriminatory. We had only CEOs coming out of Mumbai, foreigners as well as Indians. So that's the level. They all came at wonderful hours.
Okay.
Now that our tariffs have been lowered by Airbnb through dynamic pricing, we are getting all kind of other people also who
right.
definitely look for cheap flights. And most of them arrive at midnight or something like that.
Okay.
I am up front. I tell them, you come in at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. I'll still come and receive you. But earlier than that, you pay for it and I'll send a guy.
Okay.
Nobody wants to pay.
Right.
So then it becomes, quid pro quo. They come in at a decent hour. But anything more than 3 hours early check-in or late check-in, you have to pay because the maid has to come.
And how much do you charge if you send a person?
Same, 500. It's not
to the
it's not expensive.
And all that.
You don't want to, yeah, idea is not to rip off your guest, you know, which is the...
Because
which
going
is
from here to the airport itself is around 500 rupees, right? And probably more than that.
1,300 rupees to the airport, the cheapest taxi.
Yeah, yeah.
standard taxi is about 1700 with the toll and all that.
Right.
But I'm not sending anybody to the airport.
Okay.
I am sending them to the location where I have given them an address. Okay. If they want services to the airport, I'm happily do it. Okay. But I have to hire a driver and I have to borrow Grace's car, for which you have to pay actuals.
Right.
We don't charge any profit. Actuals. You pay actuals.
Right, right. How do you deal with Airbnb tax?
We file our income tax. Grace has been made a taxpayer.
Okay. Do guests book your home only for stays or do they book to host parties as well?
No parties. I can help them to host parties, but we don't, allow parties because I'll tell you the reason. You don't want to discriminate between Indian guest and a foreign guest, right?
Right.
Foreigners holding parties will hold it not like our people. Yeah. Our guys do lavish parties.
Yeah.
A foreign, they'll serve one beer, two beers, and they'll have early dinner and, go to sleep, right?
Okay.
I'm not, as I said, this is observation, not discrimination, right? Please get that. Yeah?
Right.
Yeah, our Indian parties will carry on till, if there's no check, they'll carry on till next day.
Yes.
Right? And then they'll bring the roof down. They won't allow anybody else to sleep either.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you do? What do you do when someone has caused some damage to your Airbnb listing?
So far, we've never made anybody pay. We've absorbed it.
Okay.
But we're seriously thinking of getting a deposit on a booking because a lot of damage has happened, especially with our Indian youth.
Okay.
Such expensive linen and sofa fabric on our sofas and on our dining table. My God, all the curries and all these things are spilt on it and they just don't bother at all. So we have to have a way, and I need to talk to Airbnb about this to find a solution, really.
Okay. So do you accept all the queries you get through Airbnb?
Yes, I answer them.
Even if the guest has no rating or reviews?
I think people have been so respectful towards us. And the one reason I assign to that is trust. We trust everybody who comes to our home and we make it amply clear.
Right.
And also you must understand, with a reputation like ours, there are the law is on our side. If I make a complaint, there will be definitely serious action taken.
Right.
I think everybody knows that who reads our reviews and all that.
Right.
They know that we are well connected and, it is up to them. If they behave, they have a good time and go. If they are up to something, then I can track it down.
Okay. Do you accept unmarried couples?
Why not?
Locals and Indians?
I don't see any reason. Equal opportunities for everybody.
For one night and all that, it's okay for you.
No, nobody has...
What do you think about your neighbors judging you for that? I mean, it's a kind of a sensitive question, but a lot of hosts have that in mind when they host couples.
You have every reason and right to ask me that. In the Kovida apartments, everyone has the highest respect for us.
Okay.
Including the landlord who said, any guests that you allow to stay in these apartments, we trust you and it's fine even if they are unrelated couples.
Right.
Right. So what does it mean? It means, we have to give it to our youth, Manish. I mean, we have to trust them. They want to get married or they're engaged to be married or they're getting to know each other. I make it amply clear that when you come to our place, you are coming as mature adults who have accepted each other and know what you're all about. I don't want any fuss on anything. And they make it amply clear in writing on the page.
Right. Okay, sir. So coming to a close, how has Airbnb hosting changed or impacted your life?
I think it's allowed me to continue my life as I've known it. That I didn't. So in other words, in short, I'm not retired.
Yeah. Okay, sir, that was one hell of a ride we had with y'all, and I'm sure all the Airbnb listeners out there are going to get a lot of goodies from this podcast episode. What do you have to say to the new Airbnb host coming up?
Well, I would wish, first of all, I'd wish them good hosting, and I would say that every experience is as good or as bad as what you are and what you put out there in your mind.
Right. Okay, so thank you for your time. I hope you have a great time in Bali, and hopefully we shall meet in Bangalore as well.
Wonderful. Okay, Manish, thank you for reaching out to me. And yeah, I'm glad that I can speak I was able to speak about Airbnb as well, not just only my hosting experience. But I think there are a few things that Airbnb really needs to get right, especially the acceptance of your host, not only super host, you know, they remain incommunicado. That's not acceptable.
Right.
That's not acceptable.
Yes.
Whether they have a branch in Delhi or otherwise, it's not the question. Airbnb is Airbnb, irrespective of where you have your guys managing the place or how you manage it. That's not the point. Airbnb is what I deal with, and I think they should be more comunicado.
Right. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening to our podcast. You'll get all the show notes and details of Mr. Casey Kurula's listings in the show notes. And I'll also put up all the details which he said throughout the interview. Thanks for listening and take care.